Over the next year, we will be celebrating our 375th anniversary. It felt important to Reverend Tom and I to honor our congregational roots and the relationship that our two churches have shared over the generations. At times, we've been very close, being one congregation, while at other times, harsh actions and words were exchanged. Now, in the 21st century, we are struck by how similar our call to doing good works in the world actually is. On the national level, Unitarian Universalist and United Church of Christ associations are quite simpatico. Over the years, our two denominations have done several successful projects together, and it made sense for Tom and I to be allies for justice in the Sudbury community and beyond. Since I introduced to the members of First Parish the idea that our two congregations were going to meet this year, I've heard a plethora of stories about different connections with MCC that many of you have. One member shared with me the story about his marriage to his wife in the MCC sanctuary, and others about how they attended MCC at one point or another as their spiritual lives evolved. In writing this sermon, Reverend Tom mentioned that he had heard similar stories. Nancy Moore, a member of First Parish who's sitting here this morning, sent me an email recalling her story. And she says that basically she heard about the split between First Parish and a Memorial Congregational Church when she first arrived in Sudbury in 1969, 133 years after it happened. She wrote, "Then I was MCC member and a choir singer and recall that much was made of the fact that when the conservative Congregationalists left to start their own church, they took with them the Bible, which had been at FPS for a very long time. A schism occurred, and after the effects were still reverberating in then, 1969, or so we were told by the very old-timers. So bad was the feeling created by the rift that people were not speaking to each other for a generation at least."
The story of the split of the First Congregation of Sudbury is long and complex. It reflects changes that were happening in our burgeoning nation by our ancestors striving to be faithful to their own beliefs. The rift that formed our two congregations must have been painful for neighbors, friends, and family. At that time, and that pain has continued, as Nancy said, to affect us even generations later. As we explore a past of division, we look towards a future of unity. As two separate congregations, who have more in common than we might think. Two congregations caring for neighbors. Two congregations searching for justice. Two congregations on a journey to make the world a better place.
To better understand our incredible town of Sudbury and our place in it as people of faith and service, I purchased and read the book Puritan Village, The Formation of a New England Town. How many of you did the same thing? A few of you. It's filled with an incredible amount of information from town records, letters, and diaries. One can truly get a sense of the concerns and hopes that were held by the inhabitants of the Sudbury Plantation way back in the day. Sudbury's story begins in large measure with the patriarch of three, Peter Noyes, who, having returned from time spent in Watertown, Massachusetts, purchased passage to New England for 11 of his nearest and dearest, most of whom were his family. During the same time period, the Goodnows, the Haineses, and the Rices have also chose to leave England behind and search for good land to farm on these distant shores. Watertown, where they had initially landed, was already commissioned pretty much, and it took a significant political effort, apparently, to get land there. So these families endeavored to secure a plantation, which would ultimately be called Sudbury. Land grants, as it was said, that were received would eventually total more than 40 square miles, including now the land of Wayland, Sudbury, Maynard, Stowe, Framingham, Ham, and Natick. The lands west of the Sudbury River were first settled in 1643. Powell, the author of The Puritan Village, wrote that Noyes united with Brian Pendleton, a wealthy London man who had enjoyed power in the first few years of Watertown and then fallen out of favor, and together they added a third man, the Reverend Edmund Brown. All three petitioned the General Court of Massachusetts for a town granted below Concord. Brown was looking for another parish, Having left Old Sudbury in England, he arrived in Watertown in time to give the petition added support. It is very likely that the general court, full of Emmanuel and Cambridge graduates, as was he, named the settlement in Brown's honor.
In 1640, 2 years after the first Sudbury settlement, the forebearers built the first church and meeting house on the east side of the river, which I think is that way.
That side. It's the Wayland side.
I'm not good with directions.
It's okay. I'll help you.
Thank you.
Okay.
However, quite quickly, the west side of the river, where we are now, became settled. And it became quite a distance for those on the west side to travel to church. And so in June 1708, the courts gave the settlers on the west side of the river permission to build their own meeting house and have a minister. And you can actually see the documents that allowed that in the Goodnow Library. In 1722, services commenced, and the Reverend Israel Loring became the new minister. Relations were cordial, and the ministers on each side of the river even exchanged pulpits once a month. Loring remained minister for 50 years, while Edmund Brown was only minister for a mere 38. This present meeting house was built in 1797 and is the second meeting house built on this spot. And a little side note about New England history and New England towns. Each town was organized around its church. The members of the church were those who made a confession of Christian faith, while the members of the parish were those who lived in the town and paid the poll tax that supported the church, but hadn't had a religious experience of conversion in the church. Reflecting this two-tier arrangement, the minister was the spiritual leader of the church as well as the teacher of public morals to the townspeople. These were the standing order churches, church and parish in the same institution, with a religious leader and public preacher in the same person. Powell shares that the activity of Sudbury parishes during this time was inextricably tied to the life of the borough. Town officials walked in procession to church, attended divine services, and on occasion fined citizens either for non-attendance to church or for unseemly behavior in the pews.
One has to wonder what that unseemly behavior
was. We are both really curious what that unseemly behavior could be.
And I also do have to say I would fine for non-attendance.
I think that's a really great idea. I'm all in favor for that.
Okay,
one.
There you go.
Unfortunately or fortunately, depending on one's point of view, all things eventually do change. And by the mid-1700s, a group of evangelicals were calling for the revival of Puritan orthodoxy. They asserted their belief in humanity's eternal bondage to sin. Yay.
Boo.
People who opposed the revival, believing in free human will, crazy things like free human will and the loving benevolence of God, eventually became Unitarians. During the first 4 decades of the 19th century, hundreds of these original congregational churches fought over ideas about sin and salvation, and especially over the doctrine of the Trinity. Most of the churches split over these issues. In Sudbury town politics, there was a series of discussions about separating between the different sides of the river, east and west, due to economical land grant and taxation issues. These discussions began in 1714, and it wouldn't be until April 10th, 1780, that the Massachusetts legislature would agree to a division with the proviso that the original settlement had to forfeit the town's name. In 1835, there was a vote at town meeting to change the name from East Sudbury to Wayland. Now, this is all to say that the climate was ripe for change, and Sudbury wasn't the only town undergoing this conundrum.
In 1818, the parish in Dedham made the choice to call a liberal minister. One Sunday, some of the members promptly got up and walked out, taking the records, the silver, which Tom said this morning was probably the better idea, and other assets with them. And a year later, on May 5th, 1819, at the ordination in Baltimore, Unitarian minister William Ellery Channing, who served at Arlington Street Church at the time in Boston, delivered a sermon called Unitarian Christianity that helped to give Unitarians an understanding of self and a strong platform. By the way, Unitarian back in the day was considered a derogatory term and was used to identify liberal Congregationalists. At this same time, the deacons from Dedham on both the Orthodox and liberal sides took the matter to court, and a jury ruled that according to the law, the church was built and run by the parish's expense for the benefit of the whole parish, and the minister worked for the benefit of the whole parish. Therefore, the parish owned the assets, and what's more, the parish had the right to call its minister. Some cried foul, noting that presiding judge Isaac Parker was a Unitarian himself. But when all the appeals were finally in 1821, the ruling stood.
So clearly, there was a time and a climate for drawing sides and divisions. And it was in this environment, as the story goes, that in 1836, Rufus Hurlbut, who had served as the called and settled minister of First Parish of Sudbury for more than 20 years, and who was an adherent of Orthodox Congregationalism, arrived with a colleague of his choice, ready to preach one Sunday morning, and the doors were locked with another Unitarian minister preaching inside.
We all know that story. This dramatic moment is actually the climax of a battle that began 4 years earlier. My colleague, the Reverend Carl Scoville, in 1959 wrote about this time, gathering facts for the story from town records and other various forms of communication. But let's picture this for a second. The year was 1832. There was a smoldering discontent all throughout New England and in Sudbury between parish and church, just like we heard in Dedham. The parish includes all the members of the overall community, those who pay taxes to support the meeting house and minister, and the church is made up of the members who attend regularly because they have a direct experience of Christ. They were considered or referred to as the elect. The discontent started in the parish, so noted in the record. We discover the premonitions of liberalism in a report of town meeting on May 5, 1832. A motion came up which aimed to see if the town will choose a committee to wait on Mr. Hurlbut and request him to give his reasons, if he had any, why he declines exchanging with some of the neighboring clergy, as he formerly did. Mr. Hurlbut refused to exchange pulpits. He refused to say why. But everyone thought it was because all of the surrounding parishes had Unitarian ministers. Hurlbut was protecting First Parish of Sudbury for the Orthodox Congregationalists. What I've read explains that it was only after the American Revolution that the liberals could turn their full attention to liberal Christianity. What ensued over the next several years was a struggle between what became two congregations meeting at First Parish, the liberals and the Orthodox. The goal of the Orthodox was to get the parish records, which were being held by Dr. Stearns, one of two physicians in town, a liberal. Apparently, the one who held the records held the power and ownership of the building and grounds during that period in history. It is not known how Dr. Stearns obtained the records in the first place. But at town meetings and various church meetings and eventually en masse, liberal parish members descended and who were not considered the elect, came together at church, voted in Dr. Stearns, the liberal Unitarian, into the lay leadership of First Parish. It was a coup, and the Orthodox were enraged and stormed out of that meeting. Sudbury, just like Dedham, ultimately went to court over the election and the name First Parish, and the liberals won. In the meantime, Mr. Hurlbut knew that there was a Unitarian minister preaching that fateful Sunday morning. How could he not? When he came to the meeting house and demanded entry, he brought with him his selection of Orthodox preacher, whom he wanted to preach the message of the morning. Previously, this would have been his right, as the minister was the one who selected all the substitute preachers. However, Mr. Hurlbut had lost the right to do so at a previous town meeting.
What happened next is a history that many of us have heard. In the words of MCC's own church history, written by Hal and Betsy Cutler, in his quiet manner, Mr. Hurlbut assured the listeners that he would raise no trouble. As for himself, he said, to accept this change would require that he abandon his convictions, and that he could not and would not do so. With a sob in his voice, he ended with, "I go, never to return." When the Unitarians refused to concede the pulpit, Hurlbut left, and the Orthodox church members, who were the majority that morning, left with him. And so, echoing splits happening throughout New England, the congregation in Sudbury divided. The ultimate reason was, in Reverend Scoville's words, because there was a desire for the freedom of religious association and the freedom to think for oneself, even in religious matters. These two new, hard-won freedoms, a product of the American Revolution, in turn encouraged two movements in this country, the separation of church and state, and the rise of liberal religion.
After Mr. Hurlbut left and took a large part of the congregation with him, First Parish spent several years engaging a lot of ministers. It was in 1844 when Linus Shaw became the first Unitarian minister to settle here at First Parish. Much has happened since his ministry, such as the town installing a new clock in our bell tower in 1873. A new pipe organ was installed in 1897. The first woman minister was called in 1904, Ida Hulton. In 1921, the congregation sold that 1640 communion table for a $1,000 victory bond. In 1930, the congregation refused to sell the meeting house and land to the town of Sudbury. In 1964, the Atkinson building was complete. And between 1994 and 98, an addition was added and restoration of the meeting house was completed. In 2001, our rainbow flag symbolizing the welcoming of GB, LBT, and Q, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and questioning people, as valuable members of this community, was vandalized. And over 1,000 people, including the pastor and members of MCC, attended a rally in support of First Parish's welcoming values. In the spring of 2013, First Parish of Sudbury called me, a Unitarian Universalist lesbian minister, as their 43rd minister to serve First Parish. This congregation has done their utmost in your absence to be the liberal voice of reason on the rocky plain. It hasn't always been easy throughout history, as theological and social norms have evolved, but the forebears of First Parish have talked the talk and walked the walk, which we continue to strive to do today.
The members of the congregation who followed Reverend Hurlbut had a journey of their own as they sought to find their identity and a place to worship. Services were held in other buildings around town, including the Methodist Church, now the Presbyterian Church, across the street, and in a hall owned by William Brigham in Sudbury Center, before finally building a new church on Concord Road across from Goodman's Hill Road in 1840. In 1880, the congregation moved to its present location in a newly built congregational chapel, which now serves as MCC's parlor. The organization incorporated under the name Memorial Congregational Church in 1890. You know, it's always really funny for me to hear our congregation referred to as the conservative one.
Times have changed.
In the 178 years since the split, there have been obvious changes in our thinking.
Finally caught up. Just kidding.
While many in the church find comfort in a Trinitarian theology, we recognize that all of our faith journeys are unique. We talk about a still-speaking God who continues to be known to us in many different ways. In choosing to follow the teachings of Jesus, many are led to a progressive call to care for others, to speak out against injustice, and to always continue exploring and growing in our faith. MCC underwent many of the same changes that First Parish did, including our own pipe organ and expanding our buildings. MCC called their first female interim minister in the 1980s and their first female settled pastor in 1996. Earlier in 1996, the congregation voted to become open and affirming, explicitly welcoming lesbian, gay, and bisexual people to join us in our faith journey. In 2013, that welcome was extended to include transgender persons and persons of all gender expressions and identities. When Nancy Moore recalled the tension that still existed when she first arrived in Sudbury, she also remembered a service that was held on March 14, 1976. The event was marked by a walk up by the MCC congregation to First Parish of Sudbury, followed by a joint service and choir sing. Fortunately, and I've heard this from lots of people, it was a gorgeous day out. The MCC minister, Stanley Russell, brought the old Bible and presented it to the then minister at First Parish, symbolically ending the schism, confirming an era of good feeling. We thank Nancy and the many others of you who have shared with us your stories.
At our schism in 1836, our differences were so great that we were unable to coexist. But in the years since, we have come closer and closer, and now we're able to find more common ground than we ever have before. As we walk our parallel paths, we acknowledge and celebrate our differences, and we look forward to the opportunity to support one another on our separate journeys, solidly rooted in our shared and separate traditions, working together where our paths converge, building the beloved community.
This year, as we celebrate our joint anniversary, our two congregations will continue strengthening our bond. We will work hard to mend relationships that go back generations and to form new friendships, continuing to remind all that we meet on the journey that love and compassion are the guiding principles for religious faith. And we will continue our traditions of living our faith as we join together to serve our neighbors, seeking to create a world of equality and justice, where sharing by all means scarcity for none. Together, we will participate in events and activities to feed the hungry, open conversations about civility in our town, and continue being loud voices of welcome for everyone who seeks a place to belong.
In closing, we turn again towards the words of Powell from Puritan Village, who writes, "If, as it seems, we today are in a period of radical social upheaval and violent transformation of communities and entire national and international populations, much perspective can be gained from the close examination of a somewhat analogous period in the 17th century. If we abandon our New England heritage, we do so at our peril. The Sudbury townsmen might not have been able to order their community forever as they had hoped, but they set a remarkable example for all the generations which have followed them. Friends and new friends, it is with the greatest respect for the members and the minister of Memorial Congregational Church that we welcome you back as we enter into the year 2015, which will mark our collective 375 years of assembling as seekers of religious truth, wisdom, and freedom. There are more for us out there in Wayland and Framingham and Maynard and Natick that share our historic roots. Maybe someday we should welcome them home as well. This morning, the members of MCC ventured to First Parish, realizing that over three decades ago, you made the walk from your sanctuary to our sanctuary, carrying with you the Bible that was taken so long ago. We welcome you in a spirit of collaboration and love again this morning, and we look forward to the many ways that we can share our much-needed ministry in this world. I invite you to be our partners in being that liberal religious voice of reason in the town square. There is no doubt that we can do more works, good works, together than we could ever accomplish alone. For this we pray. Blessed be.
Amen.